Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Mark. I see you've come up to Geelong from Ocean Grove this morning. Were you on the beach?
Yeah, no.
Walking the dog? What were you doing?
I wasn't this morning, but the dog did look at me as I drove off with a, "You swine, you've left me behind and not taken me for a walk." So I will have to redeem myself when I get home.
All right. Well, today we're talking to Alan Fitzsimons. I met Alan some time ago through the Irish-Australian Chamber of Commerce. Is that, I think that's right, Alan, isn't it? Is that where
we first met? Yeah, that's right.
So I was keen to get Alan on, Mark, because he's an expert in his field. He's got an interesting business, and he's very big in thermo or geothermal activity, and he's hot, you know, everything's about smart systems for smart houses and high-value systems. So I think he's got a good story to tell, as all our guests do.
So welcome, Alan.
Yeah, thanks, Mark and Bill.
So what
Delighted to be on the show.
Excellent. Yeah. So what we normally do, and we're not going to change it, is where did you go to primary school, Alan?
Yeah, so I was born in Dublin and raised in Kildare, Clane, a small town in Kildare called Clane. And the primary school I went to was School Fádraig, which is Irish for School Patrick, I suppose. So that was my primary school. And then for secondary school, then I went to a boarding school, actually, in Mullingar called St. Finian's. So that was the first part of my education.
Alan, that wasn't the Christian Brothers, was it?
No,
because I went to Christian Brothers boarding school here in Australia, and yeah. I don't know how I survived.
So when you were at high school, did you have any vision of where you'd be when you grew up, so to speak?
Yeah, all the other guys in my class that I was palling around with, they all wanted to go into engineering, and I remember them talking about it, but I wanted to be a plumber. I got it in my head that I wanted to be a plumber, and I was just fascinated by it all. I remember I had this FOSS was the name of the institution that the training institution for trades in Ireland, I had this orange A4 sheet which described what the apprenticeship was, and I must have read it 100 times. So I wanted to even leave school and go straight into my apprenticeship, and my parents made me stay in school to finish it. And it was actually the best thing that ever happened to me, because, finished school, went into the plumbing apprenticeship. And even before I was finished my apprenticeship, I knew it wasn't going to be enough for me. Yep. And I wanted to learn more. So I hadn't even finished my apprenticeship, and I started looking into engineering so I could learn more about how everything works. So not only just with my hands, but just the engineering behind it.
Yeah, fantastic.
Alan, I noticed in reading up on you, as we do with everybody, that you're a master plumber from the City and Guild of London Art School. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Just to describe, what is a master plumber, and what is the City and Guild of London Art?
City and Guilds, yeah. So the City and Guilds Master Plumber is a very renowned award to get. So it's not just given out to anyone. You have to firstly be a plumber, but then you also have to have engineering experience. So you have to show that you've developed your knowledge to an engineer level. So at the time, I did before I finished my apprenticeship, I started a diploma in mechanical services engineering. So that was a 2-year diploma course. And part of doing that, I knew I was working towards getting my Master Plumber certificate. So once I finished my Master Plumber certificate, then I was able to apply to become a registered engineer and get the Master Plumber cert. At the time, there was only about 200 people in between Ireland and the UK that had it. So it was a big occasion. Went over to London and received the award. And that's probably that was one of the highlights of the early part of my career.
What age were you at that stage?
I was about 25.
And were you working, Alan? Were you working for somebody then, or doing your own?
Yeah, So I was working. So again, you know, doing my apprenticeship, I excelled through that, and I was working in the residential market, and I actually started up as a subcontractor. I was doing my own plumbing work in the, you know, we had the Celtic Tiger at the time, and there was a massive housing boom. So I was working as a subcontractor, doing my own plumbing work, and I had an apprentice working with me. But then again, I knew I wasn't going to learn what I wanted to learn. I always wanted to have a business, and I knew I was kind of, if I stayed subcontracting in the residential market, that I could only go so far without some guidance. So my goal was to then go, yeah, get further education and then go into the commercial industry, so I could learn about commercial and bigger buildings and bigger jobs. So I think at the time I was working as a subcontractor when I was doing the training, and I got my Master Plumber cert. But once I got that and I had my engineering, that opened up a lot of doors for me. I went into the commercial industry working for a mechanical contractor, and I climbed the ladder pretty quickly to become a foreman. Okay. And I ran a few commercial projects up around Dublin City.
Yep.
Have you ever had a job outside plumbing? When you're at school, what was the very first job you ever had?
I think I was worked as in a pub collecting glasses to start out with.
Oh, that's a good place to start. In an Irish pub in Dublin.
Yeah, that's it. Pretty typical. Yeah, it was in Kildare. Yeah, in my local town.
Yeah.
So that was a good place to learn all about customer service. And then I actually worked in the local petrol station then, back when petrol stations were manned and you just pull up in your car and somebody would fill up the car for you. Well, that was me.
Yeah, I've done that.
So that was my first job.
so all your master plumbing, your work with your and your and working into the commercial, was that all in Ireland?
That was all in Ireland, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
When did you jump ship, so to speak? When did you move out of Ireland?
So, well, there's a little bit more to the story.
Oh, okay.
So once I finished my first diploma in mechanical services and the master plumber, that opened up a lot of doors for me. So I then transitioned into a project management role with a large mechanical contractor in Dublin. And I worked with them for about three years. And during that time, I went on and done another 3 years of study in building services engineering. So that was another big tick for me, just to continue with my learning in engineering. So once I finished up at that job, and a friend of mine owned a manufacturing company. They manufactured hot water and solar renewable products. And he asked me to go working for him, and in a sales role. And initially I had said, oh, I don't really want to get into sales. It's not my thing. And he said, no, it's not like you're pushing on people and you're selling to people. You're selling on your technical knowledge and your technical understanding and building relationships. So I gave that a try, and went working for them, and again became the sales manager. I was looking after the whole of Ireland. And that was a role that I really enjoyed. It was a far cry from, it was the exact opposite really from working in project management and dealing with plumbers and being on site every day. Now I was actually helping plumbers and trades design systems and assist them with the engineering behind why we would specify something. That basically finished off my career in Ireland. So over the 10 years, it was working in plumbing, management, and then sales. So I had a really good, solid foundation for when I actually moved over to Australia.
So what brought you out here? Did you come with the hordes of young Irish graduates when Ireland went through that downturn?
Not really. No, actually, I've a young family, so we had three kids. By the time we moved out here in 2011, and we actually had three kids by then. So we weren't we didn't follow anyone. We were always going to travel. I remember even over the years, if I ever was working near the airport on my lunch break, I'd be sitting in the car park beside the airport watching the planes flying off.
Plane spotter.
Yeah. And I just knew I'd be on one of them one day. So it was never actually a point where we made the decision that we were going to move. We were always going to move. It was just always the plan. So we moved over here with my wife and three kids.
Did you come with a job or did you just come to visit?
No, had spoken to a couple of companies and they said, look, just give us a shout when you get here. So it was pretty we just jumped in with the 2 feet and came straight out, picked Melbourne, picked Mornington. We moved straight to Mornington. We were just feel lucky we picked such an amazing place to live.
Yep.
But we just picked a place and went for it. Yeah.
All right, Alan, if we jump forward quickly to where you are today, you're an award-winning business. I know you won an award in the National Awards for the Irish Australian Chamber of Commerce. But let's give us a quick description on this, on the business you own and run now. And I know you're dealing really well, so just give us a quick snapshot on what iEnergy is now.
Yeah, so we're a mechanical services contractor. And we provide HVAC, so heating, cooling, ventilation, air conditioning for residential projects in Melbourne. And so, the area of the market we're in is the custom home residential market, where a big consideration is the energy use and how much it costs. One of the biggest costs you have for any home is going to be your air conditioning systems, your heating, cooling, hot water, all that kind of stuff. So we've taken a commercial approach to how we run our jobs in a residential market. So we work very closely with builders and architects, and we get involved at that design stage. So we look at the size of the building, the energy performance of the building. So looking at how much heat loss there is from the building, how much solar gain there is from the sun at different times of the year. And then looking at the systems that we install in there, what would be the optimal size system. We don't want to go too big and have too much energy cost, but then you don't want to go too small and then have a potential for spaces that are uncomfortable. So we've taken a commercial approach, and this was all from my experience back in Ireland, where we've heavily invested into documentation and our technology around how we manage our projects. So when we're working with builders and architects, we can document the project, we can design, we can put everything onto a drawing so that it can be factored into the architectural intent and the architectural design, the structural drawings of the building. So the time we actually get to doing a project, everything is designed and documented, and it's just a matter of turning it up and installing it as per the plans.
And what have you seen change then in the technology and stuff, Alan? Because obviously, given your extensive and well-travelled background, what's evolving? What's the latest and what's coming?
So, how buildings are constructed is evolving. So the air tightness in buildings is getting better. So there's less air movement through the building. And then the quality of materials, the U values through the wall, which is the energy transfer through the walls and windows, that's becoming better as well. So there's a decrease in the size of the systems that you need to put into the houses, but then there's an increase in the need for fresh air into the buildings. So as buildings get tighter, you need more air movement. So one of the big things that we're starting to see, it's massive in Europe, where buildings are really, really tight, whereas it's been slower on the uptake here. But we are starting to see, and we're starting to install a lot more heat recovery ventilation systems where we're bringing fresh air into the house, removing stale air from the house, but it passes through a heat exchanger, so there's minimum heat loss from the building. But then you've also got the directive from the government about gas. So gas is no longer allowed on new builds. So there's been a push towards more electric systems. So that's seen a change in how yeah, just how we design systems, removing gas from the building, and how do we go about making it electric. There is a big barrier to entry with the cost that's needed to go fully electric in a building. So, you know, not every project is suitable, but that, you know, there's a few considerations around it on the type of systems that go in there. But certainly we're starting to see a lot of homes where you might have, you'll have a reverse cycle air conditioning system, a heat pump doing the hot water system. Everything's electric. There's no gas. You've got solar panels on the roof, and then you've got a battery and an electric car charging.
Alan, interesting there. Just reminded me, we did a podcast with a friend of ours in Geelong that builds high-end homes, Russell Malashev, Malashev Homes. And I recall a friend of mine in Melbourne bought a house in a coastal town that was actually built by Malashev, and it wasn't brand new. And they complained to me that it didn't have an air conditioner in it. And I actually spoke to Russell, and he said, it was built, it didn't need air conditioning. But they were adamant it had to have an air conditioner. But it was that's the design of the home, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it does happen. You know, you definitely want heating in a house. Nobody wants to be cold, but you know, some people don't want to have cooling or don't feel the need for it. So, or maybe have a very small system in one room. So, it depends on at the time who's building the house and how the house is being constructed. So, there's different levels of that would say whether you need heating or cooling or not.
And the hot water systems with heat pumps and stuff, they're efficient, Alan? Are they?
They're efficient. You know, just as in general, you know, if it was just a straight hot water unit with an electric element, every kilowatt you put in, you get a kilowatt of energy out. Yep. Whereas with a heat pump, you get an efficiency with it. And when you put 1 kilowatt in, it could give you 4 or 5 kilowatts out.
Oh, okay.
So that's the COP. So you're massively increasing the efficiency of it. And then with hot water, because it's a stored body of water, you can, if you've got solar power, you can heat that during the day. And then when the sun disappears, you've got the stored hot water there. So you can use that at nighttime. And then the next day when the sun comes back up, you can recharge that hot water in the tank, which is the same with solar power and batteries for cars. Yep, you can charge a car during the day and charge the batteries during the day. And then at nighttime, you can use all of that.
It's interesting. It also changes the way you have to think, isn't it? Because the house we're now living in has got panels on the roof. So we used to turn the dishwasher on when we went to bed. Now we don't. Now we turn the dishwasher on when the sun comes up.
During the day. And it comes down to lifestyle as well. If you're lucky enough that you are home during the day, maybe you work from home, you could get a lot of benefit out of having solar power because you're using all that energy during the day. But if you're not home during the day and you are mostly home at nighttime, then maybe you're not going to get that payback as much.
Alan, do you use contractors or have got your own employees?
Yeah, so we got our own employees. We got about 20 direct employees and then another 15 to 20 indirect employees. We do use some contractors in specialist areas. A lot of the guys we use, we've been working with them for the last 10 years, which is probably another point that I was going to make. That iEnergy was 10 years old in the last couple of months.
Good. I also remember when I went to your site out in Melbourne. And we commented, I have this saying about people who put signs on the wall and the signs become wallpaper. And I think in fact, in my phone this morning, I was looking through my photos and I took photos of those signs you've got on your wall. I hope they're still there. But it was all about culture and it was all about people. And you were very passionate about that and how you kept the culture alive. So one of my favourite questions, as Mark knows, is if we come and interview your staff and I ask them about Alan's management style and leadership style, what response do you think I'd get?
Interesting one, and I think that's something I've worked on myself very heavily over the last 10 years. If you asked any of my staff, they would say that I probably have a coaching leadership style, where I, you know, the culture we have here is inclusive. It's a level playing field. Everyone gets a say on how we do things. And we all move forward together. There's no hierarchy. I try very hard to listen and provide support to the team around us, and just look at the strategic planning of the business and look at what the future is and how each person in the business fits into that and how we can have everybody moving towards their goals. And that's probably one of the keys to, you know, we have a very high retention of staff here, and that's one of the keys to it. It's always looking to learn new things, always looking to move everybody's career forward together, and nobody gets left behind.
I was actually going to ask you that, because there's one thing I scribbled down when you were chatting about your days in Ireland and beyond. Yeah. Was education was a huge part of it.
And
it was interesting that you wanted to leave school and get out and be the apprentice. Your parents went, yeah, just finish off school. But that's put you in good stead in doing everything else that you've done. So have you continued that philosophy in personally, and then obviously through your business life, in educating people around you and giving them the opportunity?
Yeah, so it is an interesting one, that I wanted to leave school because, you know, in later life, I've learned that learning never stops. You know, I always thought I would continue on with my engineering, but when I started business, I realized, okay, well, if I do more study in engineering, it's not really going to get me any further than I am. So I went and I did a diploma in high performance leadership management.
Yep.
And that was back in 2019. So that was a big eye opener, and it was actually a big relief, because a lot of the stuff that I learned, I already found that I did naturally. With my business partner, Michael Faulkner, we both founded the business, and we're on this journey together. So we both went and did the diploma in leadership management. And over the last few years, you know, even with the Irish Australian Chamber of Commerce Awards, we won the award for innovation, and that was innovation in technology and how we do things. But what we've broadened that innovation in the last few years, and how we talk to our team. The innovation is in our team. It's in how we deal with people and the people around us.
Yeah, fantastic.
Alan, you've never been afraid to ask people for. Or come and call up someone and say, oh, let's have a chat, because I know you've done that with me. In fact, you came into the last time we met, you came into Southern Cross Station, we went to the National Bank, I caught a train up from Geelong, and we sat around for a couple of hours and just talked about business and that's the sort of person you are, that you're... It sounds to me, I could describe you as a sponge for knowledge.
Thanks.
So just... going back to 10 years the business has been going, where did you and Michael meet?
So when I first got to Australia, I secured my first position as a sales engineer with a company called Holyoke Industries. They're a manufacturer of air diffusion equipment. So if you look at the grills in the ceiling at Eureka Tower, they supplied all of them. So I was traveling around Melbourne, meeting different mechanical contractors and helping them with design of their systems. And I bumped into Michael at one of those contractors, and we both hit it off and had seen a gap in the market for a company that specialized in a full suite of services for mechanical services. There's a whole other story I could talk about there with regards to the type of mechanical services and the whole market, but I think we'd be here for another half an hour. So
was it a shake hands agreement and off you went, or have you more structured and formal?
No, it was very shake hands agreement and let's make it happen.
Cool.
So we got straight into it. So that's probably been one of the best things I've ever done, and I've learned more from doing this than any of the training I've did elsewhere. So it's been a great experience.
Very good. So if people want to get in touch with iEnergy, the website is ienergy.com.au. And you specifically high-end residential, or do you do some commercial, or
no, we don't. Residential is very, very niche.
That's your sweet spot.
And we stick with that. That's our sweet spot. Yeah.
That's brilliant, Alan. That's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, great, Alan. It was a pleasure to interview you today. And I know how passionate you are about all things, I guess.
Yeah.
And I guess if people contact you if they want to find out more about what you're a specialist in. But as Mark says, go to the website. But thank you for joining us today. It's been a delight. And I'll have to be careful, Mark, because remember we interviewed Fergal Coleman. Right? We're getting a bit of an Irish.
I think it's brilliant.
Comment going here.
And Bill did say to me, "Oh, Alan hasn't got an Irish accent." And the first thing I noticed is your lilt. So
there you go. Yeah.
Well, no, but I can understand you.
I've slowed it down a bit. Yeah.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you very much, Alan. Great to chat to you. Thank you. Bye bye.
See you now. Bye bye.